roll call.
Virginia.
Vice President Chung. Member Fay.
Here.
Member Kobus.
Here.
Member May. Member McCluskey.
Here.
Member Rotra.
Here.
President Kowalczyk.
Here. Okay, we're going to start our board meeting today with student recognition. The board is going to recognize two robotic teams from Lincoln, and their parent teacher coaches are here also. If you'd like to come forward, you could do each group separately and then tell us what your project was and how things are going with that. Whoever wants to go first. All right, we've got the green team. We promise we won't bite. We really want to hear about this.
All right, I'll introduce them first. Okay. All right, so this is LMS Robotics Team 492, this year called Snow White and the Critter Crew. And they will tell you all about their project.
What did you guys build?
So the problem this year was the lack of biodiversity in an urban setting. So pretty much there's no animals living in the city anymore. And our solution was to create a sort of a habitat you place into a building that animals can live in.
So this habitat is pretty much, so it's three cinder blocks with the middle hollowed out so that a bird or a small mammal can live inside of it.
The outside of the brick can be customized to the building's design.
And so pretty much it would just look like a regular wall with a little hole in it. To the outsiders, but to a bird, it would look like a habitat.
In addition to their research project, they also made a robot. So, would you like to point out the name of your robot and a couple of its features?
Okay, so this robot's name is Becky. It was named by a guy at the Rockwell Automation Innovation Fair or something. And it's also called Yellowbot, but Becky is better. So I guess something cool about our robot is that we can run it this way or we can run it this way. And we do this because in the small space we're given to set up our robot for runs, we didn't have enough space, and we use this as a...
advantage.
Yeah.
We would like to thank the board for your support in the LMS Robotics Program. The school district provides faculty advisors for the club that supports over 30 students throughout the club and competition portions. They also provide the facilities that we need to make the club operate. You guys allow us to host you guys host the regional First Robotics First Lego League tournament at Mount Prospect for 32 teams around the region. You also provide funding for our registration, equipment, and tournament expenses. So we thank you very much.
Thank you. It looks like an awesome project. Anybody have any questions?
I'll be Vicky today.
I'm curious to know the name Becky. Does it stand for anything? I know sometimes robot names are really acronyms, and I'm not sure if that's the case here.
So we were at a Rockwell Automation Fair for a demonstration, and we didn't really have any names for a robot. We just had a Red Bot and Yellow Bot. So a guy's like, you should name them Becky and Clyde. So now they're Becky and Red Bot's Clyde.
Okay. Anybody?
No, they have absolutely
Okay. Well, thank you very much. You want to do that now? Or? We'll have this on. Good. Okay.
Hello. This is Team 493. There are two teams at Lincoln, and so we're sort of a parallel team to 492 that you just heard from. And so I'm actually going to have the team introduce themselves first, just name and grade, and then you guys can share a little bit about your project.
I'm Noah. I'm in eighth grade.
I'm Ryan. I'm in eighth grade.
I'm Mav. I'm also in eighth grade.
I'm Ethan. I'm in sixth grade.
I'm Linnea. I'm in seventh grade.
I'm Ella, and I'm in sixth grade.
I'm Sammy, I'm in sixth grade.
Yeah, so our problem was, well, we actually went through several, but the one we finally settled on was that, oh no, I forgot it. Help.
So our problem was that in community gardens, lead can get into soil, and this can contaminate the soil. There we go. This can contaminate the soil, and it can be really dangerous for both plants growing in the soil or people either planting plants in the soil or eating the plants.
So the solution we came up with was a robot that picks up a chunk, I guess is the word, a chunk of soil, tests for lead using a chemical, sodium rhodizonate, which is just a chemical that's used for that.
We also use sodium bitartrate, which is a buffer solution. And then if you want to, you could use hydrochloric acid as an extra, like, just to make sure that there is lead in the soil.
It's named the lead zeppelin.
Very good.
So after it's tested for lead, if lead is detected, it will use a chemical called EDTA to basically separate the lead from the rest of the soil.
Oh. Then the clean soil and the chemical will be separated out into a different container, and then they can empty it out manually.
Yeah, the EDTA and lead is put into a separate compartment of the robot where it's zapped, and then the lead can be taken out manually, and the EDTA can be reused.
Yes, I have this memorized. So our team name is Beans of Maryland, which each letter is the first letter of the name of someone on our team, which three of them are not here, which is not the best. So it stands for Bella, Ella, Evan, Noah, Sammy, Mav, Ethan, Ryan, Linnea, and Nicole.
Very good.
I'll just echo what Mr. Bray shared. Just thank you so much for your support. These kids and the kids on the other team and kids who were in the club certainly benefited from the space, the facilities, the equipment, the time and energy of the teachers and other staff that were there. And so we're thankful for the opportunity and thankful for the chance to come this evening and be recognized. So thank you very much. You guys can have a seat.
And we have some certificates for you guys also, okay? Okay. Am I on?
No.
Yeah? Okay. I'm going to say name. You might not be here because you're definitely not all of you are here. Angela Bray. Hi there. Congratulations. Next up, Paige Hall. She's not here. Okay. Effie Hazopoulos. She is not here. Katrina Kazopoulos is not here. Alexander Knipple is not. Okay. Ava Lelich. Nope. All right. Ronnie Patel. All right. Did I say that right? Mm-hmm. Okay. Congratulations. Marina Rowe. All right. Emily Stanton. There we go. Congratulations. Thank you. Amy Zhu. Did I say that right? Yeah. Okay. Congratulations. Thank you. Isabella Bueno. Nope. Ella Boutre. Yes. Congratulations. Noah Christensen. There you go. Congratulations. Evan Detzner. Nicole Jadlika. Samantha Corkle? Nope. Yes, yes. I thought I heard Sammy. Congratulations. Paul Lyons. Oh, Mav, I see. Ryan McCluskey. There you go. Congratulations. Lene Winnebo. Did I say that right? No. Ethan. There you go. Thank you. And that's everybody that's here. If you want, and Mr. Kenneth Bray. Thank you very much. And Mr. Dave Rowe is not here. Abby Grabowski, is she here? No? Jared Christensen, thank you very much for your support, guys. And Eric, thank you very much. Congratulations. Michelle Hadid? No? Is that how I say it? All right. Congratulations. Thank you so much. Thank you guys for coming out tonight. Thank you for doing this project. You know, you're gonna do amazing things in the world when you're so innovative and creative and you work together well. So thank you so much for doing this, and thank you for coming out, guys.
Can we get a picture?
Oh, yeah. Okay, we're going to continue on. We're going to do some board reports. NSSEO, Brian?
Good evening. So I attended the last NSSEO board meeting on February 5th, and this was the official dedication, the bus dedication. No, I didn't bring a picture with me this time. But the bus is being named after... what's being called the Bob Z bus. Bob Zimick, I don't know if you're familiar with Bob Zimmick. He was on the District 214 board for 23 years, and he was the NSSCO board president for 16 years. And when he passed away, that's when the foundation started setting aside funds to ultimately buy this bus in his honor. So his family was there, the foundation was there, so it was a very nice dedication. We had the Shining Star, Will Pocklington, nice kid. He gave a presentation, and he was very enthusiastic, and it was a nice moment for him and his family. And we talked about a proposal to build a new gym at Timber Ridge. We didn't talk too much about it, but again, they've been setting aside funding. And that's what they do. They're very good at setting aside funding and then spending it. So they've set aside funding to build a gym at Timber Ridge, which it needs one because it's for kids with behavioral issues, and they definitely need a gym. But right now the proposal is to build a gym for about $5.5 million. So I don't know. We'll have to talk about that and see if we really need to spend $5.5 million on a gym. Maybe we could do it for less than that. But that's in the works. And also, I don't know if you've been following what's been going on in the Tribune and ProPublica about seclusion and restraint in schools in Illinois, but it's been a big issue. And it's Springfield is very involved, and there's been a lot of stories about high rates of seclusion and restraint of students in schools across the state of Illinois. And NSSCO is right in the middle of it because, it being a co-op, they obviously have a lot of seclusions and restraints because that's a part of that environment. And their seclusion and restraint is meant for the protection of the students. ProPublica and Tribune really didn't make much of a distinction between a regular school and a co-op with kids with special needs, kids who are often very violent, kids who are running out of the school, kids who are safety threat to themselves and to others. So that's why you have in co-ops, for example, NSSCO, there's a one-to-one ratio, student to teacher. They have dedicated teachers monitoring the hallways just to be ready to help out in these situations. It's commonplace, and they're very good at dealing with these kinds of students. But I think to some extent the Tribune and ProPublica, I think their intentions were good, but I think that they have painted these co-ops in a bad light. So the co-ops are now pushing back and trying to educate Springfield because this was brought up because every couple months the Tribune submits FOIA requests to NSSCO regarding how many restraints and seclusions, and they recently got one, and the figures from November through January, there were like 300. For normal school, that would be shocking. How many restraints, seclusions do you have in a regular school? Probably not many, a couple at the most, but that is commonplace for these schools. And so it's become a very big issue for these co-ops, and to kind of educate the public, educate these journalists, and educate Springfield about that restraint and seclusion doesn't necessarily mean that they're not doing a good job, or it's jeopardizing the safety of children, it's actually the opposite. Seclusion and restraint in these co-ops are necessary, and they're trained. So that's been a big issue for the last several months. So I think that's about it. So our next meeting is March 4th. Thanks.
Thank you. Next up was Education Foundation, but that's Vicki, and she is not here today. Any PTO reports? Jen.
I don't have one. Unfortunately, Vicki went for me, so apologize. Next time.
We'll hear all about it next time. Anybody else? Jerry?
So I attended the Lincoln PTO earlier this week. Primarily, it was some updates on some of the activities that have gone on. They had a successful dynamite night, which is a fun night where the kids can come to the school, and there's a lot of activities. And the report was very positive on the evening. There was also a ski trip in January that they had 58 kids, 58 skiers. Everybody had a great time. Sounds like nobody came back injured, so all good. and just, you know, some planning for other activities with the end of the year coming, eighth grade activities, you know, to send the kids off in a good way. Some other activities for cultural arts in sixth grade on the docket for the end of the year.
Thank you very much. Rachel?
I attended the Westbrook PTO meeting last night. Their STEAM night is coming up in a few weeks on March 12th. They already have over 200 students signed up, almost 400 people total, so they're looking for a really big event. They are looking also to recruit committee heads and a treasurer for next year. So if anyone's interested in that, keep an eye out on social media for the info. Their next meeting is March 20th.
Thank you. Kim?
I attended the Fairview PTO meeting, which was February 11th. And I wish I had brought my notes with me because it was a lively discussion. Some of the things that were discussed were the investigation of a potential new supplier for school supplies. I understand some schools had issues with the quality of the supplies, and I think possibly Fairview has for the past several years where, you know, folders tear after the first few weeks and things like that. So I believe hopefully one of these future meetings they'll actually have samples of things to kind of see whether a new company would be able to offer better quality at hopefully a comparable price. I think I mentioned last time there was a discussion as well about the potential for using any surplus PTO funds for a possible legacy gift to the school. I think there's still some discussion around that, what that might be, whether they might be able to use funds for a couple of different things, including potentially funding some of the teacher grants that didn't get funded through the Ed Foundation. So that was a possibility. And I think the other piece was some discussion about what the best means of payment might be for different school activities like special lunch and PTO membership, things like that. It seems like each of the different school PTOs kind of does it differently. I think at Lyons, for instance, special lunch is all online, whereas at Fairview it appears to be, it has to be check or cash, and sometimes that can be problematic for parents, but of course there's a lot of logistics involved on the PTO side too. So there was some conversation about that, and certainly I'm sure the PTO would welcome input from parents if they were feeling strongly one way or the other about what is preferable in that regard. And then there's also conversation about officers for next year. And so if there's any interest, you can reach out to the current board about that.
Okay, thank you very much. For board president report, I was just going to put out a little feeler to kind of dispel any rumors or ideas that are floating on social media regarding the property at Lyons Park and the TIF. Lyons Park is not going to be sold. There's not a new, some people might be surprised to hear that. There's no new Lyons Park to be built. it's in the TIF because the village put it in the TIF. The school board did not put it in the TIF. And the only discussion of TIF funds for the school has been to potentially improve or maintain due to the property developments in the TIF that are being built that might increase enrollment at that school. So again, we are not selling any property. We are not selling Lions Park. We're not building a new Lions Park. And we have nothing to do with the TIF and how it is designated for what properties. That would be the village. And that is all I have to say on that matter. And we can continue on with the superintendent's report.
First item is preview of the FY21 staffing plan. In your board packet was a summary of FTE. You will see that it is essentially the same FTE as this year. I put in a sheet that shows the sectioning by grade level, and there are no new increases of sectioning necessary based on the enrollment study. The only change in the staffing plan is a 1.0 FTE, and that's for a special ed ESP that was necessary to hire this spring. There is a plus and minus factor. Again, administration is coming to the board asking for permission to increase administration at Lincoln by one assistant principal. I have asked Adam and Paul to provide a rationale to the board. There were some documents in the packet. I will ask them to come forward now and present a rationale.
Good evening. First, just to give a little bit of background, and as Dr. Allmiller stated, the proposal is to, it's a net zero effect of FTE. It's to add a middle school assistant principal, and it's to eliminate the position of the student services coordinator. Several years ago, when the district was having a really hard time finding psychologists, we implemented a system where student services coordinators, those positions were created at all four of the buildings. And what they were doing is they were performing some special education functions, but they were on the teacher's schedule. They did not have an administrator hat, and they did not have the ability to evaluate. Since that time, the elementary buildings received assistant principals, and their role was part student services coordinator and part assistant principal to be able to handle the evaluations. That model did not change at Lincoln. So at Lincoln, we've had the position of student services coordinator. This is the fourth year the district has had that position. After much trial and error and conversations and collaborations, the reality is that position just does not work in that capacity. Without being an administrator, it has a lot of limitations. In that four-year time period, that position has been filled by three different individuals. And so what we're proposing, and Mr. Siminski is going to come up and talk about some data and how that delineation of responsibilities is stated out. But we're looking to replace that student services coordinator with an assistant principal at a salary at a competitive assistant principal salary of $86,000. At this time, Mr. Siminski is going to begin talking about the roles and responsibilities and how that's going to look before he gets into some different comparisons.
Good evening. Starting off, I guess with a little bit of a theme. Probably want to go back to the slide first. Yeah. So the first delineation that I wanted to start off with is numbers. So clearly, more Lincoln has more students, more staff, more parents. more facilities, just in general, the numbers are significantly larger. So starting off with a neighboring district comparison, you kind of get an idea. We're pushing close to 400 students per administrator, and then amplify that again with parents, and you have quite a bit of those responsibilities going on. Within District 57, I don't know why it's off on the view, sorry about that. Starting off where it is, again, with our numbers, taking a look at them, we do have the most amount of students, we have the most amount of licensed staff members. Westbrook has more ESP staff with their instructional assistants and so on for the needs of the students, but you kind of get the idea of where it is that we are in comparison to the other districts, or the other schools, excuse me. And then I also run the numbers if we were to have three administrators, and you kind of see that it balances out quite a bit and more equitably with that. And then a little bit more detail on that as well. Oh, look at you. Nice. So, again, the administration to students ratio, the certified staff to student ratio, and then kind of the average of the elementary school. Numbers. So again, elementary 1 to 261. If we were to have two assistant principals, we'd be down to 1 with 259. So we'd be right in line with those numbers. Then the assistant principals with the certified staff, same thing, about 19, approximately 19 certified staff members to one. So when I talk about more, the numbers are a portion of it. So you do have more evaluations, you have more people through your building, you have more going on. So on the one front, it is definitely more. On the second item, it's different. So if you take a look at some of those additional considerations, a lot of those considerations are things that do not or minimally impact the elementaries in comparison to the middle school. So we have not only more numbers, but we also have some complex things that that come up as well with age. So obviously we have more events, we have things like that, concerts, after school activities, dances, clubs. We have mealtime, we have hot lunch service that needs oversight, and Mr. Steen is typically on that. Obviously, increase of discipline, paying attention to social media usage, technology, any of that stuff is going on as well, where you don't see as much of that, again, at the elementary school. So increase in social-emotional needs, a lot of things as the students start to transition, as puberty starts to hit, we definitely have more things that, again, different things that come up. That add quite a bit of complexities as well. The last item on that increase in social emotion needs, that online alerts. We actually have a system where if there are things being typed in the kids' Chromebooks, whether it's something that's to do with self-harm or something that's inappropriate or something that we have cause for concern, Trevor Hope actually gets an email and he forwards that to us. So any of our 777 students that look up something, we get an alert and we follow up on every single one of those. So because we have one-to-one Chromebooks, it's quite a bit of following up with that as well. So additional info, you see the additional things. Scheduling, we have 10 periods a day for our 777 students. We have lockers, locker rooms, hallways, passing periods, things like that, locks and lockers, and all the facilitation that goes along with that. So although on the one hand, you can absolutely look at the numbers and say, well, very clearly the numbers totally make sense, that we are very, very heavy on that side. But then when you actually break it down and you see the fact that it's not just the numbers, but it's also the different things that we are tasked with and responsible for, it's definitely a lot, and that's where that support of that additional assistant principal can come in. So taking a look at the responsibilities, what we're looking at is when we talk about that student service coordinator, part of the challenge that we have at Lincoln is they have AP coordinator meetings, they have student service meetings, they have things like that, where right now the only non-administrator is representing Lincoln. So when they talk about district level initiatives, when they talk about changes that are happening at the building level, a lot of that is run through our student service coordinator and then needs to be relayed to us as well, either me or Randy pulling us in the loop. And that doesn't occur at the elementaries because they already have an assistant principal that was in that role that is facilitating that. So part of the benefit of having an additional assistant principal is big time in evaluation. Evaluation is a very time-consuming process if you want to do it right, if you want to do it well. So having them as a part of that definitely knocks down the amount of evaluations that we have to do every year. But I envision a team. You can take a look at some of the delineation responsibilities, but we overlap and we work as a team all the time. It's something that Mr. Steen and I balance out, and sometimes it's an all hands on deck kind of situation. So he typically takes the first level of discipline, but you know what? If there's a more significant issue, we're working together and we're collaborating together. So part of the challenge is that when we have some of those larger items that come up, or more significant things, or just the day to day, you know, it's just a tough day with, you know, a parent coming in concerned about something that was on social media, and then we have, you know, a tussle at lunchtime. It automatically takes us out of some of the things that we otherwise could be doing. So having somebody else that's able to navigate, to work with us on that is definitely very important. So you take a look at the assistant principal role under column E, and that's a little bit more aligned with what it is that the assistant principals do at Lions Park, Fairview, and Westbrook. So they do a lot of that facilitation, but they would easily help out in any of those capacities. So it would just be an additional level of support for an already crowded, full, big-time numbers and big-time different changes that are going on as well. So this is a mock-up of how we envision the delineation responsibilities, with definitely a lot of overlap and teamwork. Part of the thing that I'm very passionate about is that very first thing under the delineation responsibilities for principal, that teaching, learning, the leading of curricular change, some of that. And I have expressed before where it is a challenge, it is a significant challenge when you're working a lot more on the logistical, structural things that takes me out of the classroom, that takes me out of teacher meetings, that takes me out of some of the initiatives and some of the changes that I want to create and drive, just because I can't do it. So a lot of that is just taking me away from what I think as an educational leader I really should be pushing forward and doing. So I'm finding myself either doing it on the weekend or over breaks or over the summer, where I'm trying to create these plans and development of the plans. But as far as once the day-to-day grind goes in, there's quite a bit. So I would love to be able to have that additional support to be able to facilitate, drive more of the change that we've been talking about at the rudimentary level, that I would like to be able to develop and create for a school. So that's kind of in a nutshell. A lot of the numbers are similar to what it is that we saw last year. I did update them for this year. And the delineation responsibilities, we kind of kept that as a draft as is, based off of what it is that the current student service coordinator does, in addition to the tasks that would be added to that plate. And we're happy to take any questions.
At this point, I will ask the board to discuss this position. The staffing plan will come forward to you for approval at the March 19th meeting. And when your discussion is concluded tonight, I need to know whether or not to include this position in that staffing plan or not.
Okay. Jen?
First off, thank you so much. I appreciate all the data, as well as kind of separating out the responsibilities. I love the idea of collaborating the two roles into one. I think that's brilliant. For me, I'm 100%, would approve this. I think the fact that we're net to our budget, I don't see any reason why not to. And especially because of all the work that's gone through. So definitely approve it from my perspective.
Kim?
You had mentioned initially, Adam, that the student services coordinator was created, it sounds like, kind of to fill a gap in a way between the admin support and some of the social emotional support needs mm-hmm. that the students have at this age.
Yes.
It sounds, though, like it's not as effective from the standpoint of supporting admin, right? If a lot of the meetings that this person sits in on then really have to get retold to somebody who has authority to do something about it.
Correct. There's an extra step that's involved.
Right. It's redundant.
Not the best use of, you know, time and streamlining communication.
Sure.
Sit in a meeting and then spend time to go back and meet with Mr. Siminski, Mr. Steen to have the same meeting.
Right.
and know when they're at the meeting at the administration building, they have no, because they're not an administrator, they have no decision-making power.
Right.
Which again, takes time and, you know, is not ideal.
Yeah. And so from that standpoint, I can understand the benefit of shifting out of that role into another assistant principal who would have that authority, and it would, you know, take away that redundancy. My concern, and even to phrase it that way is a little bit overblown, would be with regard to what gets lost on the student support side. And I don't know if you can speak to that at all, because I imagine that the assistant principal has more of these administrative duties. They're not necessarily as involved in the students' lives in the same way that a student services coordinator would be.
That's why we wanted to have it. We didn't just want an assistant principal and just take all the responsibilities of an assistant principal and just split it 50-50, because I think that that would kind of get lost in the mix potentially. But I feel like if you have a specific assistant principal dedicated to student services, they would have that as the responsibilities. The student service coordinator currently attends all the IEP meetings or 504 meetings as an LEA, so they are the representative of administration at the meeting potentially. But if there are any questions administratively, again, they kind of look around the table and say, well, we got to get back to you because we don't have an administrator at the table. We have a facilitator of the meeting there. So I don't necessarily see that since the expectation is still the support of our students at the student service level, that's not necessarily changing. What we are looking at is we're looking to add administrative responsibilities, and that's why that administrative bump up would be kind of an expectation of like, yes, we have a role that is busy and definitely supports the students, but we're also going to be adding on some administrative pieces to it to make sure that it fulfills an administrative role, because with that obviously is a bump up a salary and things like that, that the expectation is that you're working beyond the typical scope of the contract.
Sure. Okay. That makes sense. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Sorry, Brian.
Quick question. Is it going to be the same person?
I don't think that person has the credentials administrative license.
Maybe it was an inappropriate question, but I was just curious if there would be like an easy transition.
I've stayed in close communication with that staff member because I think all things considered, she's done a really great job. I just think it's, as Adam has said, it's the third person in that position in 4 years. It is quite challenging when you're heading up meetings and trying to run meetings, but you don't have that, again, administrative hat. And so when people kind of say, well, we're not gonna follow through with it, then it ends up being a secondary or third meeting with me to actually initiate some of those things.
I commend you for making the recommendation, and I think it's a good idea, and I fully support it.
Thank you.
Rachel?
And just to clarify, in addition to all the special ed and the 504 aspect, the new administrator, as you mentioned with the credentials, needs a Type 75 to do the evaluation piece that would be shared with you and Mr. Steen.
Yeah,
okay, so that's the additional, which therefore would automatically classify them as an administrator in a different, okay.
So the last column is kind of like all our duties.
Right.
So top of the level is evaluation, so we'd split it three ways instead of two ways. Also the evaluation and the hiring of instructional assistants, since they specifically work with our students, either with 504s, IEPs, things like that. That's automatically taking a couple of things off of mine and Mr. Steen's plate as well.
Okay. Yeah, I'm in support. I think it makes sense.
Jerry?
Actually, just two things. One's just a clarification. I think the cost differential of the position change, is that the – I think you put the salary for the new position in the memo, but is there a significant differential?
I don't know where they are on the salary schedule, frankly.
Sorry, I don't know. They're on the teacher's salary schedule.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so they're probably somewhere in the 50s, I would think.
Okay, so it's not a huge jump to go to this.
No,
okay.
It's not, because it's a beginning administrative position.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And the salary listed here is within the range of assistant principals, not only in our district, but also within the area. I made sure to be able to place that competitively, however, not out of range by any means.
Okay. And the other question is actually related to the evaluation part. That seems to be a significant component. Are those typically concentrated in a certain part of the year where it becomes a crunch, or are those spread throughout the year?
Yes and no. New teachers, non-tenured teachers, have a different timeline than tenured teachers. So non-tenured teachers, we need to submit. We need all us SLOs, student learning objectives. We need all observations and everything wrapped up and done by the end of February. In anticipation of potential release. So we have a shorter timeline with more observations. Tenured teachers, we have until May to wrap up everything. So SLOs are still due the same timeline, but as far as me getting in for formal observations and things like that, since they are on a two-year cycle, it's a little bit different where I have a little bit more time for those.
Okay. No, thank you. I'm supportive of the change.
I personally think the data is there, and I mean, it helps with evaluations. You're still maintaining the services that you've had before, and you're just able to take care of work that you had to extend longer and make more meetings, and so it makes sense to me also. So I think we're all in consensus here to move ahead with that.
Board members, I cannot thank you enough. This is going to be a huge, huge impact on a positive note for Lincoln. So thank you.
That's good.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you for the support, for sure.
Thank you. Thank you for the presentation.
The next thing in the packet was curriculum cycle update. There was a memo just showing what the curriculum cycle review cycle is going to be for next year. I previewed that at the environmental scan. There's also a memo in there on the writing curriculum. Unfortunately, Mary's not able to be here tonight, so if you had any questions, I'd have to table it for another time. Communication plan update was also in your packet, just providing you, I meet with Jenny twice a year to update that, and I can't speak highly enough, and you all know the great job that Jenny does for us.
Yes, she does.
And the final presentation is for the student handbook policy 7190 update. We are bound by policy to provide an update of the code of conduct annually. And Sarah Tabersky, our director of student services, is going to do a little presentation on social emotional learning for you.
I just want to say one thing regarding the curriculum. You know, we get a sheet here with all the, you know, testing and evaluations and everything that, you know, you guys go through the year, and it's a lot of stuff that you have to do. It's you do an awesome job, and we had somebody telling us about the writing curriculum that they are enjoying this year, and we thank you for coming and telling us that, Ms. Rush. And so it's good to hear that it's working and you're enjoying it, and the professional development was really good the last time around for Valentine's Day, last Friday? And it was good to hear. Thank you very much. Sorry, go ahead.
Good evening. So I'm Sarah Tybersky, Director of Student Services. Tonight we will review changes to the student handbook, also known as the Code of Conduct, and seek your approval. I will also review the district social emotional learning expectations and the proactive strategies we implement to address student needs. So District 57 takes a preventative and positive approach to discipline through the supports listed on this slide. If misbehavior does occur, we use interventions and consequences aimed at teaching the expectations and meeting student needs. The Code of Conduct documents the district's philosophy and approach to addressing student behavior based on legal requirements and best practices. It is reviewed annually by the Parent Teacher Behavioral Advisory Committee and must be presented to the board for its review and approval. You received a copy of the Code of Conduct in your board packet. You'll find the change recommended by the Parent Teacher Behavioral Advisory Committee on page 12. And that was to include language for level 3 behaviors for available interventions and consequences. And this is specific to physical restraint or timeout when the student is in immediate
threat to themselves or others. Now, we do not have timeout rules in our district, timeout rooms in our district, but it is a tool that could be available should we have reason to need it at some time. Since Brian brought up the discussion at NSSEO earlier, in our district, we average about two physical restraints every year. So it's very infrequent that it occurs here. These are our highest need students, and these students are often placed at a different facility because their needs are greater than we can support within our district. So this does not change our practice, the addition of this language. It just better documents what we are already doing. So social emotional learning is a very complex topic. There you can see from this slide, this is information from CASEL. It's the Collaborative for Academic Social Emotional Learning, and it provides research practices and policy recommendations to schools, including other organizations that work with children and adults. So we base a lot of our principles on their competencies. In Illinois, we do have social-emotional learning standards. These three goals are ones we work on from K through 12. Obviously, how that looks is much different for a kindergartner versus an eighth grader. And Illinois is one of the few states to actually have social-emotional learning standards. So what do we know about best practices? From this slide, you'll see there are many studies related to what we consider best practices. And basically, it goes down to teaching positive behaviors, and social-emotional learning yields positive outcomes academically. So it's not only good for our students just to have good social-emotional expectations and abilities, but it also helps their academic success. This image shows what types of supports we have in District 57. On the left side, you'll see our academic supports, and on the right side, you'll see our behavioral supports. The section in green, I'm sure you've seen triangles before if you've been on the board or attended other meetings. The section in green provides supports to all of our students, so these are our universal supports. For students who need more intensive supports, they'll fall into the yellow or red range, and they'll get more individualized or targeted interventions depending upon their needs. This is an example of our school behavior matrix for Lincoln. As you can see on the left side, we have the school-wide expectations, which are be safe, be respectful, and be responsible is kind of cut off there. But we have different expectations for each environment in which we explicitly teach students at least one time a year in all of our buildings. So we say this is what the expectation is in the bathroom. So that's how you are safe in the bathroom, by keeping your hands and feet to yourself, exiting in a calmly manner. You don't need food or drink in there. And we go through that and may more explicitly teach these skills to some students. Here's an example of Fairview school expectations. And typically we have signs like this located in our buildings, clarifying behavior expectations for that particular location, just so students can visually see what the expectations are, and they're not expected to remember every single expectation in every different environment, because as we all know, our behavior changes depending upon the environment that we're in. On this slide, we have examples of the acknowledgments we have at each building. These acknowledgments reinforce the teaching of behaviors. They encourage the behaviors we want to occur again in the future, and they also use the influence of students who are showing the expected behavior to encourage students who are not showing the expected behavior. Another tool we use is the Olveus Bullying Prevention Program. This is designed for all students. It is research-based. It is systematic. With Olveus, we have created a scope and sequence to create consistency across the different lessons available. So you can see it's aligned to the social emotional learning standards, and it gives a brief description for the teachers so they're able to understand what that expectation is for that lesson and maybe target that lesson at a more appropriate time of the year. We also use restorative justice. Restorative justice is a mindset that focuses on relationships. So we really want to build community, not only between students, but between teachers and between teachers and students. Restorative practices are the tools we use to practice restorative justice. So we're kind of in the early stages of using restorative practices, but you may be hearing more about that from your child, that they might sit in a circle in order to have a discussion. And it doesn't have to be a deep discussion. It could be an academic discussion. So it's just a way to build that sense of community. Restorative justice has a proactive and a responsive side. So our proactive side is building that community. And our responsive side is to provide more support to students who are requiring that more intensive support. So they may have a circle that is looking to reintegrate them if they've been hospitalized or out of the building. That way they can build that sense of community again and hopefully be more successful. These are the members of the Parent-Teacher Behavioral Advisory Committee, so I just want to thank them for the time that they put in on this committee. And do you have any questions?
Did anyone have any questions? Rachel, go ahead.
How many parents are on the Parent-Teacher Advisory Committee?
We have one.
Okay.
Yes.
I think that's an important voice.
Oh, absolutely. And it is required by the law, too, to have a parent on it.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else? Thank you for the presentation. I also want to say in November when we were at the tri-conference for IASB, there was I went to a couple conferences that were regarding security and safety within schools. Mm-hmm. And this is a huge factor, having community, having the kids feel like they're in a community, having these relationships, whether they're with staff or other people. That is the best preventative medicine to prevent any violence really from happening within a school. So thank you. And this is a great start. Keep this going. And you guys have been doing this for a while, this restorative justice. This is how many years now?
This is our third year. Okay.
So yes. It's a plus, it's a positive. So it's great to hear. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have three FOIAs to report out. Excuse me. The first request was received on December 20th from Jonathan Fagg of WLS-TV. He requested information related to disciplinary actions resulting in expulsion, suspensions, or transfers from January 1, 2017 to current in the following categories: alcohol, violence with injury, violence no injury, drugs, firearms, other weapons, other reasons, and tobacco. We responded on January 20th and sent him the information he requested. The second FOIA request was received on January 30th from Katie Kim of NBC 5 Chicago. She requested written agreements between the district and companies that provide content filtering and monitoring software for district-issued devices for students and documents to show policies and guidelines for the student devices. We responded on January 5th and sent her the following documents: our current filtering companies, Securely, terms and conditions of service, COPA privacy policy, District 57 acceptable use of electronic network, and pages from our district handbook for students. And the third FOIA request was received on February 5th from Nathan Mihalik of the Illinois Retired Teachers Association. He asked for the names and email addresses of any certified staff who are retiring this year. We responded on February 10th and notified him that we do not have any certified retirees at this time. That concludes the superintendent's report.
Okay, thank you very much. Next up is our consent agenda. And you are so right. I apologize. Community comments, thank you for reminding me. At this time, if anybody from the community would like to come up and say anything, please do. Thank you.
So thanks for the shout out, Eileen.
Anytime.
I have three shout outs. So I'm Diane Rush, third grade teacher, but also on the union leadership team. And we had three shout outs. One, to actually Sarah Tyberski and Mary Gore. They've been in the buildings, and teachers have noticed, and they really appreciate it.
Awesome.
The second shout out is to the Ed Foundations. 3D printers, ukuleles, Lego robotics kits, and a whole bunch of other stuff has ended up in classrooms, in buildings, and so teachers are grateful for that. And then the writing training, thank you. It's been awesome. We feel supported, so thanks, Board of Education, for approving that.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Does anybody else want to, any comments? Okay, well, now I will move on then to the consent agenda. Jerry did the bills?
Yes, everything was fine.
Okay. And so everybody here was here, and Vicki was even here last time, so if anybody wants to, motion for consent agenda.
Motion to approve consent agenda. 1, minutes of the regular business meeting, January 23rd, 2020, open session. 2, personnel transactions. Accept the resignation of 1 certified employee. Approve a return from leave of absence of 1 certified employee. Accept the resignation from a leave of absence of 1 certified employee. Approve a second year leave of absence of 5 certified employees. Approve the employment of 1 ESP individual. 3, financial reports, January 2020. 4, accounts payable, bills. 5, approve attorney, architect, and construction manager. 6, approve resolution 220,000 authorizing intervention in property tax appeal cases.
Second.
Member Fay?
Yes.
Member Kopis?
Yes.
Member May?
Yes.
Member McCluskey?
Yes.
Member Rotroff?
Yes.
President Walsh?
Yes. Okay. There is no unfinished business, and this is our second opportunity for community comments. nobody? All right. New business is the first read of the Board of the Education policies. You all got them in your packets. Was there anything that anybody want to discuss, or have you gone over it? Nope. All right. Let's see. We could be getting close to the end here. Oh, board discussion. There is no need for board discussion. And there is need for closed session. So, get my piece of paper. All right. We have closed sessions for the purpose of the appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of specific employees of the public body. The board action will not take place following closed session. So if I can get a motion to go into closed session.
Move to go into closed session.
Second.
Member Kobus?
Yes.
Member May?
Yes.
Member McCluskey?
Yes.
Member Rotroff?
Yes.
Member Fay?
Yes.
President Kowalczyk?
Yes. Thank you, everyone. You can all go home. Enjoy your evening.